Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
This episode is brought to you by Australian Beef and Lamb. Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country and the official podcast for the New York, California, and Florida restaurant shows, the Pizza Tomorrow Summit, and the U.S. Culinary Open at NAFM. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. Email us to learn more. info@walkandtalk.com. Chefing in studio today is Jesse Tysiewicz, CDC from the Inn at Celebration. And let me tell you, I had a soft shell crab po' boy today that simply put a gigantic smile on my face. Plus, he did a sashimi grade ahi tuna poke bowl over crispy wonton tostadas. More on that in a moment. Today's guest is the embodiment of resilience, passion, and purpose in the culinary world. Born in Puerto Rico and once on track to become a lawyer, Chef Nelson Milan chose a different path, one forged in fire, sweat, and an unwavering belief in the power of food to transform lives. From sleeping in a van while working double shifts to crafting curriculum at the Culinary Institute of America, that's the CIA, folks, to leading kitchens from San Juan to San Antonio, his story is nothing short of extraordinary. Now an ambassador for Aussie beef and the creator of an innovative sofrito product, Chef Nelson's journey proves that true commitment can turn sacrifice into legacy. Let's kick this off with some dish descriptions from today in the kitchen, and we're going to get to Chef Nelson shortly. Chef Jesse, welcome back to the studio. You know, you've been here a few times already, except you were kind of like playing second fiddle over here to Chef Paul. Today was your day, and you killed it. Thanks for coming out, and congratulations on the badassery that was your dishes today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm in the front today, not in the back, kind of waving, looking at everybody, but I'm just honored to be here. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Where are you from?
Central Florida, a little city called Arbondale. I'm an Arbordalian, I guess you would say. So I lived here my whole life, all over Polk County in general. But yeah, pretty much up there.
Let's talk about what you did today. Give us the menu descriptions of these dishes.
So the soft shell crab po' boy was battered in some rice flour and some cornmeal, making it nice and crispy. I did a cucumber salad with some hot chili oil, some chili flakes, a little bit of red wine vinegar, and also made a homemade remoulade. Got some hot sauce, some mayo, some lemon, Cajun seasonings, stuff like that. Spice it up a little bit. My books, Less is More, brings out the freshness of the dish and the crispiness of the bread. And it's a nice little hearty dish, if you would.
I have to tell you,
what you did with the cucumber and the onion and all that stuff. It was spice. There was heat, but it was like the perfect amount of heat to this thing. You did a freaking great job today.
Oh, thank you. Less is more. You want the heat to come at the end a little bit, get that flavor coming in the back end. I was happy with it. Thank you.
The color on that ahi was pretty spectacular too.
Yeah, it's beautiful, right?
It really was, man. If there's tuna, if there's ahi, I might have it. I don't know. But when I jump into it, I always enjoy it. That was super fresh. You could tell, like, everything was really perfect with that. I'm glad you made it.
It's very fun to make tostadas. It's a nice light flavor because there's not a lot of cooking involved. So we'll cook with the lemon juice or the lime juice, if you would. If you like sushi, I mean, it's right there on the tongue. Nice umami flavors, just fresh. I mean, it's the best way to describe it.
Hey, it sounds like a fun dish. Are one of these items going to end up on your menu?
Yes, the po' boy will be on the menu since it is spring. It's a nice going into summer dish, handheld soft shell crab po' boy. I'll definitely put it on the menu for weekend specials.
I'm actually going to your hotel with my wife this weekend. It's our 10-year anniversary, so we're going there for a night.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. Pretty, John, do you ever think I would have made 10 years in a marriage? Yeah, the smile says it all. All right, let's welcome Chef Nelson Milan to the program. Welcome, Chef.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite. Glad to be here.
You know, we had a really great conversation the other day. It was, an hour and a half worth of talk. And we must have crossed paths. I was at A1A Produce and Dairy, and you were at the Ocean Reef Club. And since then, I feel like there might have been a few other places and people that we know together as well.
For sure. I think, like I always say, it's a big industry, but a small network. You always come across someone that knows someone that you have crossed paths with.
How do we go from Frisbees to fine dining?
Frisbees. Probably 8, 10 years old when I put together my first pizza ever, and probably my first concoction in the kitchen, experimenting at my house kitchen. And I didn't know anything about leavening agents or yeast or anything in that regard. So I just took flour and water and mixed it together and made what I called that at that time a dough that I stretch and put some sauce and cheese and some pepperoni and sausage on it and stick it in the oven. And when it came out really stiff, what I call a frisbee. I could cut probably necks with it. But nonetheless, my family enjoyed it that day. And they said that they liked it. Now that time has passed, I understand that they were probably lying a little bit to me. But nonetheless, the expression on their faces and the reaction, an immediate reaction that I gathered from their self, put me on a path of thinking that I could create stuff with my hands, food-wise, that will nourish people. And I think that's what put me on a path of pursuing a culinary career.
It's interesting how you ended up in culinary, especially when you had a trajectory, you were going to become an attorney. You were going into law.
Correct. Really, high school, and through high school, I was trying to find my way through culinary school. But unfortunately, at that time in the island, there were no places that you could take a serious course on it. There were like 3 months courses here and there, chefs that were just trying to equip people for kitchens in 3 months, but nothing serious. Graduated high school, and my dad suggested that I become a lawyer. So following that path and listening to him, I went to college, and 3.5 years into it, fortunately, I came across a very first opportunity to do a 24-month course in culinary, the first pilot program that the government in Puerto Rico has put together. So it was a public proposal and a public open proposal. And as many people as they wanted to apply, applied for the proposal. And I was one of them, 364 people to be exact at that time, to pick 25 people for 25 grants to be in that pilot course. So I got lucky enough to be one of the 25s. I just quit my political sciences courses at college, and I never looked back.
That must have put a lot of strain on the relationship with the family.
Especially with my dad. He didn't like the fact that I had switched what he called a very prominent possible career for the kitchen. And let me put this in context. In Latin America, we don't have the culture, the culinary culture that is known to be in probably in other countries like Europe and the U.S. itself. Like his notion of someone cooking at a professional level in a kitchen, in a professional kitchen, was a lunch lady at a school. So that's what he said to me when he learned that I had quit my political sciences and switched to culinary school. He mentioned bluntly, he said, "You want to be in the kitchen like the little ladies? Is that what you want to be instead of being a prominent lawyer?" My response to that was, "Yes, that's what I want to pursue." And at that point, I have made my own researches. And obviously, the top kitchens in the world were being led by males and good prominent chefs as well. And so I was very clear on my path and my decision at that time. So I stick to it.
Last week, we had Chef Fiona España on the program. And she's a Latina ACF chapter president in LA. What she said on her episode was when she got into the kitchen, she thought it was going to be all women. And it actually was the opposite. She walked in and realized that it was mostly a male-dominated field. And it's pretty amazing to see the different perspectives from people before they enter this world of culinary. I think that's fascinating.
Very interesting, for sure. But again, in Latin America, being the macho masculinos that we are known to be, and being a chef wasn't, again, looked as a very respectable or reputable and honorable profession due to the lack of knowledge probably at that time. And I don't blame him. He wanted me to be a lawyer, but I wanted to be a chef. So, and here I am.
You've spoken about angels along the way, some key individuals that kind of, in light of the fact that, you know, the relationship with, you know, your father and yourself, these people stepped up and kind of brought you through to the end of the journey. Can you talk about who they are and what they did for you?
Oh, yes. At that point, my dad was lending me a car that it was of his possession and to go to college. And when he knew that I was not going to college for whatever he wanted at that time, he said, "Let me have the keys of the car and find a way to go to your culinary school." And taking consideration that the culinary school was an hour and 15 minutes commute from the house and no public transportation at that time would take me there. So I called the school coordinator that was the one that have given me the news that I'll be, that I have been accepted to the course as one of the 25 candidates. And her name is Alicia Rivera. And I'm forever grateful about what she did for me. Because when I call her and tell her, "Alicia, I got bad news for you. I might not be able to continue with the process at this point and become part of the course, because I had no transportation to get to the school." The lady lived probably two towns from me, going in direction to the school. She immediately said, "You're not going to do that in my watch. Go out to the main highway as you can, even walking or however you can do that. And I'll pick you up every morning and we'll take you to school and bring you back from school until you can find probably a way of transportation." And she did that for me for 3 months. On the other hand, my mom's always to the rescue, knew about the situation. And she approached me and said, "Hey, find a part-time job that can get you a little bit of income. And so we can get into a car that we can do probably a down payment on it. And I'll help you with the monthly payments." 3 months later, I found a job at Wendy's that it was just next door to the school. And that's how I started my culinary career and generated a little bit of income in order to get a transportation to school. But if it was not for these two angels, let you call them, Alicia Rivera and my mom, Dominga Villalongo, I would not be in where I am today.
there's a power of sacrifice when you're trying to achieve something, where whether it's investing all your money into something, all of your time away from family, you know, all of the sweat and the tears and so on. There's something really gratifying about getting to the other side. You were sleeping in a van while you were at Wendy's. Talk about your lifestyle while you were going to school.
The car that I finally found was a Chevy minivan. And that's the one I put a down payment on and started to make monthly payments on it. It was only 2 seats. It was a cargo van. And so when I started working at Wendy's, this is one of the most busiest stores in the capital of Puerto Rico, in the town of Isla Verde, actually close to San Juan, next to the airport. And so this store would close at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I recall having to go through my section of the culinary course, baking and pastries, we needed to be at the classroom at 6 o'clock in the morning, and me closing stores at 3 o'clock in the morning. And you're talking about scrubbing restrooms and cleaning the line and mopping floors until 3, and then not much time to go back home because my home was again an hour and 15 minutes commute. So by the time I would get home, it was time to come back. So not much time to go home. And I recall been several times staying at the parking lot at the school, literally sleeping in my van for 2 hours and waking up and going to the classroom directly.
How do you think those sacrifices shaped your leadership style that you have today?
It definitely built character. And I was 19, 20 years old at that time. Obviously, you look back now, and at that time, you don't know you're going through these sacrifices or not. You're just going and doing so, because you got to do what you got to do in order to survive and succeed. Stay responsible with what you already have committed. Looking back now, obviously, this sacrifices of sleeping 2 hours and going to the classroom and going back to work next day and doing it all over and over builds character and put things in perspective that if you truly want to achieve things in life, sometimes it's not going to be as easy as you will think it is. It requires a lot of commitment from your end. It definitely shapes you to and build a platform for anything that you will build upon on the rest of the career path.
I'm certain that what you did in the van and Wendy's to get started, that had to propel you into push carts and entrepreneurship.
Yep. Wendy's, that job lasted for about 10 months until an opportunity arose. And here's Alicia Rivera to the rescue, again, the coordinator of the course. She called me to the office and she said, the chef from the Caribe Hilton, which at that time, the Caribe Hilton was the hotel in Puerto Rico. The chef just called and asked if I can send them someone that can help in one of the stations at the Sunday brunch. They used to put a massive spread out activation on Sunday brunch, like 12 different stations by 12 different countries and approach on food and whatnot. So she asked me if I wanted to do that, and that will count. The hours that I'll put in there will count as practice hours towards graduation of the course. And I said, sign me up and I'll be there next Sunday. That's how the opportunity came to work at the Hilton. And while working at the Hilton at Union Hotel, I find out that I will have fixed days off, Mondays and Tuesday. I acquire a taco cart that I started operating in my hometown on those 2 days, and actually 3 days, because my shift was until Wednesday at 3 p.m. So I will open Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning until 1 o'clock from 10 to 1, 4 hours, right in the middle of downtown of my hometown. And that's how I became a sort of an entrepreneur. And I got great results from that, to the point that that provoked buying and acquiring a mom and pop and brick and mortar business. That my plan was to develop franchises, and I got to a point that I developed 3 more carts, and the restaurant that I just acquired became that like the commissary of that venture. And I did that for about 2 years, and it was extremely successful at that point.
There must have been things that you learned through your entrepreneurial adventure with the carts that you didn't learn in culinary school.
Resilience, adaptation, if I need to describe it in a couple words, and improvisation as well at the same time as part of the adaptation. So you have to, you plan certain ways, but then again, things don't go the way you plan, and then you have to pivot and move in directions that you probably will never see coming your way. But nonetheless, it's definitely lessons, learned lessons of resilience and commitment. At the end of the day, when you commit to something, that's what keeps you going and waking up the next day and brushing your hair and your teeth and doing it all over again.
Chef, how long have you been in the food industry, our wonderful food industry?
This coming month in May, it's going to be 35 years.
35 years. You've made it a very long way, and you're still growing. You're still building a legacy. I know when we spoke, you talked a lot about mentorship. So you've mentored young cooks, you've written curriculum at the CIA, and impacted a lot of people. What does mentorship actually mean to you? And what makes someone actually worth the investment?
I think mentorship, when you look at it from the perspective of it's bigger than yourself, and it's something that everyone that is in this business owe to the craft in order to, like you said, build legacy and in order to keep the craft alive. Everybody has to become a mentor at any given time. You do the best you can in order to pour into the next generation as much as you can of your skill sets and accumulation of knowledge and experiences. It's like, my analogy to that is, it's like planting. You spread the seeds, and some of them will come up really beautiful and flourished, and some of them might not develop as much as you would expect that they will develop. But nonetheless, I think there's a beauty on passing along knowledge that and taking it as a responsibility that is bigger than yourself, the size of the craft itself. It's a responsibility we all have to pass along the baton in order to keep the good craft, which is the culinary craft, alive.
Let's talk culinary roots and identity. You help shape Latin Caribbean curriculum at the CIA. How do your Puerto Rican roots influence your cooking, and how important is cultural authenticity in today's culinary landscape?
I think authenticity is definitely the anchor to the branching out to many other possibilities in the culinary field. And in a world that we are more intertwined than ever before, ever since internet and access to that information, and you can travel at the tip of your fingers on information and culture and food and ingredients. And so I think as the world gets more mixed in that regard, anchoring in tradition and authenticity is more important than ever, because then things get blur and unfortunately evolve into something else that probably loses a little bit of authenticity and identity in that regards. I think it's very important to stay rooted and then branch out and launch from that.
I don't think that a lot of people recognize how big of a deal it is that you actually wrote curriculum for the CIA.
Well, it was an opportunity that came my way. I became the chef of the Santa Ana Country Club in 2010, and that was July 2010. And on September 2010, it happened that the school was the branch of San Antonio for the CIA was getting inaugurated. Talk about being at the right place at the right time. And the headhunter brought me to that position, put me together with the managing director of the school, and at the same time, the director of the Latin cuisine studies the department at that time was Ileana de la Vega. And we met, and the opportunity came and to collaborate with a curriculum that for the first time in the history of the Culinary Institute of America, they have shown interest in Latin cuisine. So they learned that I was from Puerto Rico, and they asked me if I could write recipes and for a curriculum of Puerto Rico, Cuba, and Dominican Republic, which is the Spanish-speaking Latin countries of the Caribbean. And that was right up my alley. And I remember I took upon the challenge and committed to it. And in 3 months, I put together about 252 pages of recipes and PowerPoints and tests. And so for the curriculum in that regards, and I passed along to them and it got approved. And when the time came to teach the course, Ileana called again and asked me if I could teach the class. And obviously I hesitated a little bit because my main focus was the San Antonio Country Club at that time, recently arrived. And I asked him what the commitment will be. And they said it's going to be probably 2-3 times a year, 2-3 groups of students coming from Hyde Park. But I told him, and you share the first set of dates so I can help you until you find someone that can teach the course. And fortunately or unfortunately, I stayed teaching the course for 8 years after that.
You went from taco carts to the Culinary Institute of America. And then now you're global. You're an ambassador for Aussie beef. Talk a little bit about that.
Great opportunity came my way as well, like the many others we have described. On this occasion, I had a phone call from Jacqueline. She left a voice message, actually, on my phone. I was in the middle of a meeting. She said, "Chef, give me a call back. I think I have a great opportunity for you." So when I called her, she said, "What about 14 days on the ground in Australia, 5 different cities, learning about beef and the process of Australian beef sounds to you, all expenses paid?" Obviously, I was skeptical again, and I asked, "What's the catch?" And she just shared with me the intention is obviously that when you come back, you help us spread the good gospel of good Australian beef in the U.S. At that time, I was already using their products for about a year, and this product speaks on their own. And the opportunity to learn where it comes from and how it's processed and what are the details that they're looking to in order to produce such a great product are definitely pulled my attention. And so I went to Australia, spent 14 days, went from city to city. We even glamped and the site where the cows lay down and enjoyed looking and watching over the stars and the moons and the breeze at nighttime in the middle of nowhere. And it was a great experience, from learning from embryo to the genes to the embryo to the development of the cattle and how they monitor the progress with chips on their ears, sending signals to servers, to the feedlot, to the slaughterhouse. The whole entire process, they have it down to a science, and it explains the reason why they do have such a great product.
Chef Jacqueline Ayola, she is so cool. What a great, great person. And, you know, she's got this this product, this Aussie Select cured cured lamb. You know about it, right?
Totally. As a matter of fact, I've been using the products, introducing a little longer than probably 5-6 months into my menus here at the club. And I'm using particularly the pastrami, and they're all awesome. I have tried them all, but in this case, I'm using actually the pastrami. It's one of my items for lunch, and it's been well accepted. Yeah, Jacqueline is a great lady, for sure.
But just for giggles, what's on the menu? What are you doing with it?
We're serving it with a naan bread, making a flat bread sandwich, if you will. Crust it a little bit on the flat top. Lace it with hot honey, like for Texas, and counterbalance of on saltiness and whatnot. We serve it with lettuce, tomato, pickled cucumbers, and a little bit of bit lettuce. It works phenomenally.
It's definitely an innovative product that you're not going to find in very many places. I'm thrilled you're using it. I have some chefs over here turned on to it as well. With that said, we're talking about evolving. How do you think the culinary industry is going? Where are we headed right now, Chef?
I think in my span life of almost 35 years, like I said, turning next month into it, I have experienced big booms of evolution. Like when I started back in the business, hot cuisine was the topic of the moment. And And then from that evolved to gourmet cuisine. And from gourmet, I went to a little bit more gastromolecular with Ferran Adrià and all these Spanish and Spaniards restaurants that were avant-garde at that time. In my opinion, I think what I've seen lately, and like I explained before, the world is getting more intertwined. It's easier to travel to places, a little less expensive to go from places to places, and being exposed to culture, food, idiosyncrasies, and approaches on ingredients. And the more you travel, the more you take back with you and apply to your own style and menus. And so in my personal experience, some people ask me, what's your favorite cuisine? Or what's your favorite dish to execute? For some reason, I have been finding myself in a position that it makes it very hard to answer that question at any given moment, because it's a continuous evolution of my experiences and places I visit and people I talk to and ingredients I come exposed to. In Lyceum, I think food is going to get more used and more mixed, and other versions of cuisine will evolve from there that we are not even foreseeing yet. That in terms of authenticity and rooting and culture are going to be fantastic mixes of different cultures, if you will. Whatever was French before is not going to be French anymore. Whatever was Vietnamese, whatever was Asian, it's going to be all blurred. But what's going to come out of that, we're yet to see. But I'm excited about what the outcome will be.
Well, Chef, that leads to something. Legacy in a frozen cube. Sofrito cubes.
The idea came from another entrepreneurship venture that I started in South Florida when I was in South Florida. And that's something we didn't talk in our previous conversation. But when I was working at the Ocean Reef, we became part of this church in Miami. And as you know, Miami is probably the melting pot of cultures in when it comes to, in regards of Latin America in general. So we became part of this small group of church goers. And we got there probably in August. And then Christmas approached really quick. And at that time, we were exchanging gifts and whatnot. And I had the idea of putting together like a little box of mixed appetizers, like mini versions of our street food in Puerto Rico, and pass them along. And next thing I knew was that some of them came back and said, hey, my family is visiting for New Year's. Can you put together something like you did for me on Christmas, like you gave me on Christmas, and this time around charge for it? And it's going to be for 30 people. And that was the beginning of an unforeseen sort of a entrepreneurship venture that turned into seven formal accounts, from hotels to restaurants to gas stations and whatnot. And what derived from that was the challenge of cooking in on standardized recipes that my wife at that time stepped up and did while I was working my day job at the Ocean Reef. My wife was a nurse, and she had nothing to do with cooking at bigger scale or big volume. So what I did is I standardized the sofrito, our Puerto Rican sofrito, into frozen cubes that turned them into recipes, like one cube of sofrito per pound of product. And at that time, we were doing like 80 pounds of beef or 80 pounds of chicken for fillings for empanadas and for many other applications. And so in our days off, I found myself going to the cooler and to the freezer and pulling out those cubes that I built for her in order to standardize and make it easier for her to cook in batches, and found out that they were very convenient. That was the aha moment, click on my head, that if it's convenient for me and in my household, I think it could be convenient for many other people as well. That way I can actually share a little bit of the behind-the-scenes secrets that we have always kept in our Latino culture. Like, sofrito is one of those smuggling devices that we sort of has used behind the scenes among ourselves, like passing them from household to household and from families to families, but it has not been shared probably with the world. And I think, and the way that has been packaged before, it's not that user-friendly either for many reasons. You either have them frozen in a big tub of 1 pound, or you have them like on the shelf with shelf stable capacities that unfortunately is not the freshest one. So by monoportioning and frozen cubes, I think you achieve a little bit of freshness and convenience at the same time on the portioning of it that allows you to utilize fresh sofrito on hand all the time.
Well, I can tell you something right now. You know, John over here, he's a little Puerto Rican, he's a little Cuban, you know, a little white guy. He's a bunch of stuff. But he's over here staring at me, and he's got like one eyebrow raised, and he's just like, he's definitely for this, okay? I just want you to know he's here for the sofrito cubes.
That's awesome. Because, again, it's already in the market here in the Dallas, Texas area. I have it actually in four supermarkets and rolling out in June in one of the mayor's chains locally as well. And it has been accepted in a way that, again, we're not reinventing the wheel here. It was just making it a little more user-friendly in order to be able to share it with other cultures. Like, my hope is that, like, tikka masala has become mainstream, or Italian marinara sauce has become, or pesto has become the gift from Italians to the world in the way that we're packing the sofrito, it becomes the our gift from Latin America to the world as well. And more cultures are willing to try it and cross that line of the unknown or the kind of foreign or too exotic in order to at least try it and incorporate it into their food, like we were talking about. That's my opinion was, I think cultures are going to get mixed and more. And I think this could be one opportunity.
So not only do I agree with everything you just said, but now I'm in the mood for a pesto. Thanks, Chef. I appreciate that. Chef, I am digging this, the sofrito. How do people find it? Where do they find you?
Website will be www.delencantofoods.com. Delencantofoods.com. Instagram is at delencantofoods as well. My personal is Chef Nelson Milan, Instagram and Facebook as well.
Jess.
Tysowitz Jesse on Facebook and N at Celebration Instagram.
Perfect. I want to thank Haley Heath, the Australian Beef and Lamb, and of course, Jacqueline Ayola, for everybody kind of putting this together with you, Chef Nelson. You are amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show today. John. Man, I tell you what, Chef, you got to see the pictures that are coming out of this. I'm going to make sure you get all the links and all that stuff. Okay, Kang, we are out.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing. Deliver healthy taste options to clientele and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.